Hello, my name is Noel Bell. I'm a psychotherapist in London, and this is a podcast on grief. And I am delighted to be joined by Annie Broadbent. Annie is a psychotherapist, writer, and now a trainer. But the thrust of what we're going to be talking about essentially is your work as a therapist, Annie, and your book, Speaking of Death. We're going to be talking about grief. We're going to be talking about death. We're going to be talking about grief and bereavement processes. But just before, maybe, Annie, we get into that, psychosynthesis trust is where you trained. So a transpersonal integrative approach. So for the therapists maybe listening, they'll sort of be thinking where that is in the broad spectrum of modalities and approaches. For anyone who doesn't know anything about therapy and maybe doesn't even want to, how would you describe where psychosynthesis fits in the broad sweep of approaches?
I suppose if I was to say it really simply, psychosynthesis works with what has happened, what is happening, and also what could be. So we place a lot of emphasis on potential and what is wanting to emerge through the suffering that we experience. Mm-hmm. So we may work in depth with past wounding, childhood trauma, but we're always holding what we call a bifocal lens. So always holding that question of what's wanting to be revealed through this.
And the I guess this the origins is the Roberto Assagioli, an Italian psychiatrist originally, so came from a medical field.
Yeah, originally. Absolutely. Yeah, and he wanted it to be evidence-based. He wanted it to be something experiential that people, knew. Not just sort of take these ideas as gospel, but people really experience to work for them.
Yeah.
I think that's probably why the trust really prioritize experiential learning and experiential training, that we apply these ideas to ourselves, we try them on and see how they fit.
So grief, you have openly disclosed the grief that you have suffered as a result of your mum's passing, and then you wrote a book. I mean, just basically, how do you view grief? The way some people just, have all sorts of views that there's various stages you go through, or some just say grief is the product of unresolved business in the living years. And I mean, how do you see the word just grief?
I mean, the words that come up for me are mystery, private, unique, diverse, always changing. It's fascinating. I sort of feel fascinated and have always felt fascinated by grief, by my experience of grief, by its existence, by other people's experience. And I think that's what, it was a big driving force behind writing, as I got really curious and I wanted to kind of get to know it and figure it out, which is my tendency. And I did that, and after I wrote the book, I then sort of wanted to look away for a bit, and what I experienced was a disinterest for a period of time.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, it's now 11 years since my mum died, that it's kind of coming back, because of course the grief never went away and never will go away. And so this realization that it's always going to be with me and it's always going to change. It's evolving all the time because I'm evolving all the time and life keeps happening. And sometimes that feels really reassuring and sometimes that feels really unwelcome. And knowing that, you know, that that's can't be said for everyone, you know, that everyone's experience is totally their own.
And as a child yourself, how did you view the idea of death?
Again, I think a lot of children, most children go through a period of sort of fascination with mortality. And that definitely rings true for me. I was really, that trait in me of trying to figure it out was there from quite a young age. And I remember thinking, you know, how can it be that this person gets on a plane and dies and this person doesn't? What is that? And I really wanted to, I remember really wanting to get my head around the reality that we would all die.
Yeah.
It felt really important that somehow, if only I could accept that, then life would be better in some way. And I think to some extent that is true. I think it is a big piece of work for us all. It's not an easy feat. And we'll probably all spend most of our life trying to do that. But being open to that and willing to move towards a place maybe of accepting a little bit more the fact that we will all die and that everyone we love will all die, I think that has a lot to offer.
Yeah, because it's the only, you know, that and taxation, the only certainty in life, right?
Yeah.
Yet it's the biggest taboo.
Don't know. We could debate that for a long time.
Well,
it's definitely
sex,
one of, isn't it?
Sex and money are big taboos, as we know from our professional work. Death is up there. It's definitely in the top five, I'd say.
Yeah, we're very afraid. We're very afraid of death and dying and grief. You know, I'm speaking particularly in this culture. You know, we don't have, we don't really have any sort of ground to support our processing. You know, we don't have very many rituals or ceremonies or, you know, that are kind of integrated into all parts of society. You know, unless you practice a particular religion, you're sort of left on your own. And I think that really doesn't help.
I mean, transpersonally, does it help to have the idea of that, you know, the concept of soul migration? Does that help that we just see this part of our existence in this form as transitory and that it's not the ultimate end? Is that comforting?
I find it comforting. Yeah. And I also am a Nichiren Buddhist. So I feel a great deal of support from that practice. And I have a daily practice, other sort of ways of connecting to the idea of the eternity of life. So I find it comforting as an idea. I don't really know what it means, you know, and I think that's important for me, that I don't get attached to it being meaning something particular, because we don't know. We don't know.
Yeah.
But something feels true for me, which is why I suppose I chose to practice psychosynthesis, that we are more than just flesh and bones, and that something in us goes back into the earth and lives on in some way. And even with that comfort, it doesn't ease the pain of loss, and it doesn't make me less afraid of losing other people I love, or less afraid of dying myself sometimes, you know. So it's kind of both and.
Yeah, because I've been to some death cafe meetings, and through attending those, I became aware of the work I mean, I suppose I'd heard of the idea, but you know, the idea of end of life doulas and how they kind of potentially see themselves as the equivalent of midwifery, except it's for end of life instead of the beginning of life. And it made me think, apart from maybe financial planning, especially in our culture, there's not really very much thought given to end of life stages, is there?
No, we don't. I mean, I think probably lots of people, if they know they're going to die, might spend time thinking about their funeral. But those bigger questions of, connecting beyond death, staying connected to the deceased. Yeah, again, we don't have the language. We don't have a platform to experiment with that, and it makes me think of the Day of the Dead in Mexico and how wonderful that is as a way of keeping the deceased alive, and that's beneficial for both, people, the bereaved community, and also just for everyone to kind of talk about that before they might die, and play around with it and create humor around it. And we could really do with some of that stuff.
The other day, I found myself just coincidentally walking through one of the great seven cemeteries, West Brompton, near Earl's Court in West London. And I mean, the road is, there's a cut through, so it's often just people cycling through or walking through. And there was a section of it that had become really overgrown. And it was really poignant. I thought, these souls that have died have now been forgotten about. There's no one coming to tender to the upkeep of the gravestone. The section was just completely bramble bushes, completely, obviously we all go back to the earth eventually, don't we? And, but it was just unlike some that were still there with fresh flowers and still with little kind of ornaments attached. It just, the idea of death that we pass and some get forgotten about, it's pretty serious business, isn't it? That
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine. I know what you mean, that sort of the forgotten graves. I also, I was surprised to discover that I didn't feel a particular longing to have a place to visit after my mum died. That's never really felt important. I mean, now, 11 years on, I it's important to have somewhere in my home and a place that my children can visit, so to keep that relationship there. But I suppose there's also something interesting about, that idea of graves and having a particular place, as though that is the only way and the only place that we can connect with the deceased. Slightly more freeing to think that they're always with us. We can connect at any point, whether we're driving down the M6 or in a beautiful forest somewhere. And maybe though that's what all the bereaved people from those forgotten graves are doing. I don't know.
How then do we best deal with the idea of death generally?
That's a big question. I think that will entirely depend on the individual. And people have to take it at their own pace. I think I'm really into curiosity. I think curiosity is such a great quality to foster and nurture in ourselves. Because if we can get curious, then we can start a relationship with whatever it is we're curious about. So that's how I would say, is let there be a bit of curiosity. about death and what the idea of death evokes in us, whether that's fear, whether that's, you know, indifference, and start from there and explore it and talk about it. Talk about it with friends, or go to death cafes, or write about it, or just think about it privately. You know, let it be a kind of practice, not every day, but just something that kind of exists somewhere in our life.
Yeah, because I often think existentially, if we're aligned to the idea of meaning and purpose in our mindful life, you know, every day is important and every day is meaningful, then we have to also align maybe to the idea that one day, unfortunately, we will die, which is not to get depressed, because that's often, I think, what people think. It's like, oh, Bryce, can you not pick a more cheery subject? But actually, to get in touch with the idea of death is then to free up the energy, more energy for the now, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think if, people, you know, I'm aware of how people respond, both clients and personally, when someone they love becomes very sick.
Yeah.
And something really changes. There's quite suddenly, especially after that sort of moment of hearing about the news, people become very alive and people relate differently.
Mm.
They connect more, they're more available, they're more compassionate. And for that, you know, that moment of discovering, being reminded that someone they love is sick, could die, it does something really extraordinary. And then what often happens is the news becomes ordinary and people go back to their own life until some other step happens. But that's always such a good reminder to me of what being in contact with our mortality can do for our presence in life. And actually, it doesn't have to be, you know, a paralyzing, depressing, you know, experience. It can be incredibly enriching and enlivening.
And we can forge a legacy that's meaningful to us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just allied to that, slightly tangentially, I think the idea of, I don't know whether you can relate to this, because I might not be able to articulate it fully. Before I studied, trained in this field, the field of psychotherapy, I used to think, probably naively, that bereavement and grief was kind of a narrow focus. A few years on, I can see how expansive it is, because it touches on all the issues of existential thought and being and existence. But also, there's massive dynamics that can potentially open up around sibling relationships. When someone, a parent dies, it reforms the family system. And then it forces people to touch on their own kind of, you know, genio-sociograms. And it gets incredibly complicated, but also goes down very interesting routes of inquiry. So it's not just about the grieving or bereaving. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That really resonates with what I've experienced in my practice, because I've worked with lots and lots and lots of people coming primarily or initially with grief as a result of my book. And the work is, you know, far broader and more expansive than just that, not least because Also, people don't want to talk about it every week. That's not really what grief therapy looks like. You don't sit there every week talking about how much you miss the person. And like you say, what it does is it opens up channels to all sorts of other things. And very often what I found is that it's the thinking from a transpersonal perspective with a psychosynthesis lens. It's the experience of grief that opens people up to their self, their higher self, their spiritual self. So whereas before they might have been very much more identified with their personal self, with sort of, you know, the kind of here and now grind of life in a more sort of practical realm, that moment or that experience of losing someone they love, being forced into confrontation with their mortality and with that pain is a real kind of cracking open and a massive catalyst for change in an incredible way. So I found it really exciting, amazing work.
And also, absolutely, and also the counselling therapy, I mean, it's had a few below the belt hits recently with all the Prince Harry stuff where people have talked about, oh, he's off getting too much therapy. I think one of the greatest benefits, I mean, it's called a talking cure for a good reason. You can talk and you are listened to. And what I have personally experienced in the past is, and I've written about this, an article around don't share your bereavement with narcissists, because it has been my experience that you share something with someone and they hijack the conversation to talk about their experience. And you're left kind of thinking, well, I thought this was about me. Where in therapy, the emphasis should be kept on you and your grief and your bereavement process. And the therapist shouldn't be having to recount theirs, right?
Yeah, ideally. I mean, using their experience is there. It's interesting. I mean, what I notice when you say that, Noel, is that I also really I recognize that dynamic. And I recognize it from witnessing it and from experiencing it as the person who's had my experience hijacked. And I also recognize it in myself of the impulse of wanting to hijack, or I suppose in the moment what it feels like is just share. Because I think, you know, one of the first things I said when you asked me about grief is that it's unique, it's mysterious, it's private, and yet it's something, you know, we all will experience at some point. And that kind of weird juxtaposition of those two things is quite confusing. So when I think often what happens in the earlier days of grief for a lot of people, when you kind of come into contact with someone else who's experienced it, there's this longing to connect and to say, me too. Was it like this? This was what mine was like. Is that normal? And to really help make sense of and feel less alone, really. And, you know, there are times obviously where that will be mutually beneficial and times where it really will feel not appropriate.
Just talking about your book, there's going to be practical examples in there about how to support someone who has suffered a loss, right?
Yeah.
You want to just reference any of those points now?
I think my number one was then, and probably still is, and I'm not sure what I'd think of all of them now. It'd be interesting, but definitely a really good one to remember is acknowledgement. And it's still amazing how much that doesn't happen, how much we avoid mentioning the loss.
Yep.
And not everyone will want to talk about it, and that's fine, but we won't know unless we acknowledge it. And that's sort of, and it links with another thing that I write about, which is about our comfort or discomfort with someone else's discomfort. So people often avoid acknowledging it because they don't want to make the other person upset or uncomfortable. And I think that's our work, really, is to kind of build our capacity to be with that discomfort, ours and the other person's, in order to be congruent and authentic. If we know the person sitting in front of us has lost someone they love, it's really, it's just a very incongruent thing to sit with them and not say it.
Yeah.
And that creates a different type of discomfort. It's not avoiding it, it just creates a different one. And it will cut through something just to say, you may not want to talk about it, but I just want to say, I heard this and I'm so sorry. And then the person will let you know in their reaction. They might say thanks and that's it, in which case leave it. Or they might, be grateful for the opportunity to say something about it. So that would be if I was to give one tip.
If people Google grief, you'll get a load of ideas around stages of grief. I'm just wondering, with social media and the information age, do we need to rethink those models? Because we're getting reminders, insidious and incidental way, very subtle ways. So there was a time when, okay, we'd have pictures, we'd have memories of loved ones who have passed, but I'm not even sure if that word passed. I don't know. People often say what a stupid term, and I sometimes agree with it, but loved one who has died. But now you can get all sorts of stuff from the most unlikeliest of sources, reminders of someone through, reminders on social media or some other, electronic image. So does that maybe change our idea of the grief stages models?
Yeah, that's so interesting, Noel. I've thought about that a lot recently, actually, kind of reaching a new threshold in my own experience. And the kind of the photos I've got, now just feeling very, very old, and this longing for something more recent. And I felt sort of envious of people who've lost someone in this kind of digital age, where they might have captured their de deceased loved ones, voice notes or videos
Yeah.
or whatever. It's a weird, weird feeling of kind of the hierarchy of grief experiences. I mean, I'm not really a fan of the kind of stages models anyway, because I
Yeah.
don't think it's linear. I think stages, the idea that there might be stages, can be a bit unhelpful. We then try and sort of really figure out what stage we're in. And but I do think that it's, this kind of technological digital age is gonna impact people's experience of grief massively. And how and what that looks like, I don't feel able to say so far,
Yeah.
but the way it's going to affect memory,
Yeah.
that I have to rely on my memories and the photos that I have got. I can't resort to a moving picture of my mum. So yeah, what does that mean? How, you know, I will continue to, yeah, to return to those kind of static memories, and there's something that feels like they would live on. It's interesting.
Annie, I could talk all day about this stuff, but I suppose we better draw to a close. How has this been for you? And is there anything I haven't asked that you'd like to have been asked or talk about as an ending?
No, I've really enjoyed it too. I similarly could talk about it for a long time. It's been really lovely to talk about it again, because like I was saying, it kind of, life happens and it's sort of started taking a bit of a back seat, you know, not my grief, but my kind of, I don't know, I guess professional interest in it. So it's been lovely, yeah, to kind of bring that back to life. And I don't have anything particular I want to add right now.
Sure. Well, I've really enjoyed our chat. Thank you very much for agreeing to come on. Yeah, good luck with your career and also your teaching at the training work. Yeah.
Thanks, Noel. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome.
This has been a podcast on grief with Annie Broadbent and myself, Noel Bell. If you want more information, you can find Annie's website, anniebroadbent.com, nice and easy. My website is noelbell.net. And Annie's book, Speaking of Death, is available at all good bookshops and on Amazon. Thank you for listening.